You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again, and I would personally like to thank you for downloading and listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas and helping make this as successful as it has become. I honestly hope you enjoy listening to the incredible stories as much as I do sitting down and interviewing my guests, and today is another great one. An American player who excelled in school thanks to his strong family upbringing, a family that put their faith first, above all, then education. And after that, if there was some extra time, they got to play some sports. And my man right here, my next guest, did it and used his time wisely. Please welcome to The Crossover, two-time NBA champ and LDLC Asvel Virabon point guard, Norris Cole. What's going on, my man? How are you?
I'm good, man. That was a great intro. I couldn't have done that.
That's why they pay me the big bucks to do this stuff, man.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me, man.
Man, I appreciate you taking the time out here, especially on a Friday, to be with us. First of all, obviously, when I talk family, the most important thing is with all this crazy stuff going on, coronavirus running around, we want to make sure that you and yours are healthy and happy. Everybody doing well?
Yeah, so far, so good, man. I talk to my family every day. We got a good group text message, a group chat, me and my right. family. So I get check-ins on them every day. I check in. They check in on me. I check in on them. And so far, you know, I've been blessed and they've been good. Thanks for asking. Hopefully yours is good as well.
Yeah, we're doing all right, man. It's Father's Day here in Spain. So I was out with my son a little bit, having a little lunch before this interview. So,
oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, and we were sitting down and we were doing our brackets. I'm like, damn, Cleveland State's back in the show.
Absolutely. First time.
Exactly.
You see, I'm representing.
I see you right there. I got him going through the first round, man. I saw it. I'm like, I'm doing this interview and the day that the thing starts. So this must be something that says that Cleveland State's at least going to get through the first round.
I like that thinking. You got good thinking right there.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, man, let's jump a little bit into your story, man. We're going to talk a lot about family, because it's been something that, as I researched you, as we researched you, it came up so often. But we talked about the fact that school was first for your family, but you played four sports, man. Like, I did the same thing. I mean, you were football. And when I say football, I mean the real one, the ones that everybody knows what we're talking about, put the pads on and get hit. Baseball, basketball, you ran track and field. How do you find the time to do all that in a family that is stressed in education?
Well, for me, it was pretty simple. I took care of the things that my family, you know, my parents, you know, demanded that I take care of first. And I was efficient with it. And I was, you know, I made good grades. I spent my time wisely doing what they asked me to do. And so I had, you know, leisure time to do extra sports. And the good thing about Ohio, we have seasons. Mm-hmm. And so, it gets cold outside in the winter. So you're not playing summer football, exactly. 7-on-7 or anything like that. So it's easy to play basketball, you know. And in the summertime, people play AAU basketball, but, you know, I like to play baseball. I like running track. You know, I had to learn to love track, but, you know, I like being outside. And so,
Track's a tough one, man. Track's it a is. Tough one.
I did. Hey, listen, I was a long jumper, so that's what I was good at. You know, right. I won our district. My high school, I won the city, and I won our district in long jump. You know, racing, man, I was too embarrassed to lose in front of everybody. But I made time because, you know, my parents, you know, one, they taught me time management. Two, you know, if I wanted to do what I wanted to do, I had to do what they asked me to do. And so, you know, it made it pretty easy for me. Plus, it was recreation. It wasn't a priority. Recreation means to, you know, recreate yourself, to refresh yourself. So I enjoyed doing it because that was my time of leisure.
Damn, man, it's early in the interview. You're getting deep on me already. Hey, but wasn't it great? I mean, when I say back then, obviously my time back then is a lot longer back than yours is, but wasn't it great when as athletes, we were able to play basketball, play baseball, play football, play soccer, play whatever, And there wasn't that push that you feel nowadays for kids to go directly towards one sport. Because I always felt like the fact that I played football made me tougher on the basketball court. The fact that I played baseball, my hand-eye coordination was better.
Exactly.
I felt like every sport kind of gelled into the other one. Is that how you felt it growing up?
That's exactly what helped me. Each sport helped me in another sport. Just like you said, you know, baseball helped my quick twitch hand-eye coordination. Football, obviously, with the toughness and the elusiveness, the no fear. You know, basketball with the, you know, being able to do multiple things, play offense, play defense, change courts without stopping. You know, track and field, being able to withstand the seasons and being able to compete one-on-one and depend on yourself without necessarily a team. All of those things helped me in my sport. And I believe that athletes would be a lot better if they did that and continue to do that, you know, now. If I were a parent, you know, I would let my child do multiple things. I wouldn't push them to do one thing unless they were like a phenom. And there's not many phenoms out there.
No. And, you know, you're turning into my favorite interview already, because anybody who agrees with me and says the same thing I think is like one of my – I feel the same way. Like, if I could go back and I see what – soccer, for example, which when I was younger, soccer wasn't a big thing. It's growing more in the States year by year. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I would have had better footwork playing basketball as a la Hakeem Olajuwon. You saw Olajuwon, who played soccer first. I mean, he had the best footwork I've ever seen in a big man.
He did, and he probably never got tired, because, you know, right. When you play soccer, it's not a bunch of timeouts or a bunch of stops, you know, on a field that's bigger than a football field. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, soccer, I wish I played soccer, actually. I kind of wish I would have tried to play soccer. You never know. That might be my next career. I'm out here.
Hey, I don't know how much money you're making, but they definitely make a lot more than you do. I can tell you that.
Ooh-wee.
Right now.
Ooh-wee. You ain't lying about that.
And look, I had to I was a multi-sport athlete like you. I had to make a decision in high school between baseball and basketball at one point. I got drafted to play baseball at a young age because I had the advantage of having a coach that was a pro scout. Mm. I had a bunch of offers, mid to low-level school offers to go and study. And my parents, who didn't have much money, were like, no, son. We'd like to give you decisions. We'd like to let you make your decision, but you're going to decide on what school you're going to go study to. You're not going to play baseball. And so they essentially made that decision for me, and I went to play basketball at Niagara University. When did you know that it was time to make the decision to pursue basketball?
I made that decision my senior year of high school, and no one forced me to make it. I made it myself, because I always knew in my heart that I was going to be a pro at something. I just didn't know what. And it had came down between basketball and football. And I was reasonable, you know. I loved playing basketball. I liked football, but I loved basketball. I was willing to do all the sacrifices necessary to play basketball. You know, with football, there's a lot of things you have to do in order to be a successful player. You know, weight room year-round. You know, conditioning. The conditioning for football is much different than basketball. The study time for playbooks and things of that nature. And I just wasn't willing to make those sacrifices for football the same way I was for basketball. And so that's how I made my choice. Plus, I didn't know too many 6'1", 165-pound quarterbacks in the NFL. I didn't know many of them. So I was like, you know what? I think I got a better shot, you know, playing basketball.
And then you got to worry about the size of your hands too. You know, that, you know, the quarterback. So you were a QB in high school.
Yes, sir. I had pretty decent sized hands. Quarterback, I was gifted because I was taught to play that at a very young age. My uncles, you know, they were quarterbacks. My youngest uncle, he was a Division I quarterback. So he taught me at a young age how to be a real good quarterback. But like I said, the size. You know, the amount of weight room that it took for me to be able to play at that level, I wasn't willing to make that sacrifice.
This might be a dumb question, but is there, because I'm 55 now, man. My athletic life has been over for years, but still hit the gym, still do my thing. But during the years, I never regretted my decision to play basketball, but I did always, like, just have that desire to, like, man, I wish I would have just played baseball. Does that ever come through your mind?
Actually, all the time. It's funny you asked me that. 2 weeks ago, I was talking to my family about that. I was like, man, Dad, don't you wish I would have tried football just to see if I could have made it? And he was like, no. He said it so fast. He was like, no. And I was like, man, I said, you know, I can stop playing basketball now and, you know, work out for about 10 months and give it a shot. He said, could do it all over again, he said, I'd do it the same way. He said, I'm glad that we did what we did. And so, but I am curious to know if I could really do it, though, because I'm a highly competitive person.
Yeah, I always felt like baseball was my sport, man. It was just
you had a big arm?
Yeah, I was 6'6", probably about 170 pounds back in the day, but I was throwing the ball about 80-something miles an hour in high school.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but – and I was coming sidearm. I was coming over the top, man. I was loving my life. I was like, I just want to do this all my life, you know?
And of course, big bucks in baseball, too.
Yeah, I know. But, of course, I can't even lift my shoulder up to put the microphone up these days, so
– Maybe you were right, because now you're interviewing me now, so I think you made the right decision.
Exactly. Hey, you said you talked to your dad about that, and he said no. Of course, you know, my parents said no to football also, but I talked to so many of you players and even some coaches that had parents that were ex-ball players. You know, they either played at a certain level, college ball, D1, pro level sometimes. Even their moms have played basketball at one point or another. Your case is a little bit different. Your mom's an accountant. Hey, your dad, I don't even know what this means, but he's a nuclear med technician or something like that. But for other guys, I'm thinking there was a pressure to perform athletically because their parents had played a sport before. But for you, that pressure had to be more academically. Did that outweigh the athletic side of things for you?
Yeah, my parents, they went to college, you know, for academics, obviously. My dad, he loved playing basketball. He played rec ball all the time, but you know, he knew that wasn't what's going to pay the bills. So he focused on his academics, and my mom did too. And when I was in Pee Wee, I remember after a game, I like came home, you know, I had an attitude, whatever. And my dad, you know, he just flat out told me like, hey man, don't be mad at us. I mean, you had a bad game. He said, you still going to eat tonight. You still got a bed to sleep in. You still got clothes. He said, we gonna love you anyway, so don't come home with no attitude after no loss. And after that day, I never felt pressure to have to perform well. They gonna love me anyway. It's just what I want to do. If it's something that I want to do, I know they gonna support me. But if I did something else, you know, they would still, you know, love me the same way. So I never felt like I had to have a good game so that I could get their approval. You know, they just wanted me to do my best in whatever I did. And so because sports was my thing, they supported me and they wanted me to do my best in sports.
You know, it's funny you say that, because my dad sat me down one time in college, my freshman year, and my grades weren't so good. And he said, man, you got a family that worships you. You're the youngest in the family. We all look up to you because you play ball. You got a scholarship. Like, if you flunk out, he said, none of us are going to go watch you flip burgers at Burger King. I just want you to know that. And I looked at him, it was one of those moments where I'm like, man, just hit me. Just beat me with a stick or something, man. Cause I know that pain will go away, but those words that he left me with, man, stuck forever.
Man, those wise words. My freshman year at Cleveland State, my dad, he told me, he said, stop focusing so much on basketball. Cause you know, after practice, you know, it would be tough. And I'd be like, man, I'm not playing as much as I should be, or I feel like I should be. And he was like, man, he said, after practice is over, focus on your schoolwork. Focus on meeting people on the university. Enjoy college. And it would take the pressure off. And he was right. You know, when I stopped, you know, cramming my mind with only basketball and started enjoying the college experience, it made it easier for me to go to the practice and do well and do better. And so, you know, he's right. You know, it wouldn't have worked out if you would have flunked out.
Yeah, like I said, it's Father's Day, man. We always tell fathers and mothers know best in the long run. Y'all laugh at us, but we know the best. Rank for me from 1 to 4 your ability to excel in the 4 sports that you play with, that you played in high school. What was your best and what was your worst?
I'm going to be honest with you. It's hard to say that because I was really good in all of them.
You sound like me, man. I'm telling you, I'm starting to like you even more and more now.
I would say I was football. If I had to say it, football was the best. Football and basketball. I was known around my city for football and basketball. I would say that my reputation was as Cole. He the quarterback for Dunbar. That's the point guard for Dunbar High School. So I would say football and basketball was the best at. But like I said, long jump, I won the city and I won the district, qualified for regionals in long jump.
Right.
You know, I jumped, 22 feet, 21 plus feet. Damn. So, and baseball, my school wasn't known for baseball, but, I was second team all league. I got invited to an invite only scouting combine. Mm-hmm. I played travel select baseball. So, I was pretty good in all of them, but baseball, I would say I was the worst. But not by much, though.
Right. You were still good. It was the least of the four.
Yes, sir.
I hear you.
I was competitive, man. I didn't want to get out there unless I was going to be able to make some noise and be good.
I always felt the same way. I'm like, I can't walk out of here embarrassed. That was my biggest thing. Like, don't embarrass me, man. Don't embarrass me, whatever you do. Or don't embarrass yourself, actually, in the long run. It's all about embarrassing yourself. You mentioned Dunbar, man. Y'all won the state championship, the D2 state championship for a couple of years. And it was the sport that you most excelled at, but you didn't get many looks. You didn't get many looks from D1 college, not even from your own hometown, from Dayton.
Right.
And I guess my curiosity is if you played football that well, if you ran track that well, I mean, obviously, I didn't look into your past as far as like any, if you had any baseball offers, basketball offers, whatever. But basketball wise, I mean, you got nothing. You got zero. What was up with that?
Well, I didn't play AAU basketball. I didn't. Because that was like 7-on-7 football, and that was spring baseball, and track was spring and summer. So I didn't do travel ball. Play AAU, and honestly, my parents always believed that if I was that good, somebody would give me a scholarship, somebody would find me. And so I never really stressed about it, I never did what everybody else did. And that was one thing, me and my family, whatever the crowd did, we was probably not going to do that. So AAU was a thing, and my dad was like, man, it's not no guarantee you going to the NBA. You're not 7 feet. I'm not going to be traveling 5,000 miles a summer to watch you play 100 games.
Right.
And spend all that money and stuff like that when I could be at home.
But that was around, if I'm not mistaken by your age, that was around the time where AAU started to show up on the scene, but it wasn't what it is now. It wasn't where high school or college coaches were going to recruit. Like back in my day, it was high school coaches or college coaches were going right to high school games.
Nah, they did both.
Yeah.
I seen the head coach of North Carolina, Cincinnati, Ohio State, that model. I seen them come right to the gym and sit right in the gym at our games. And I also, when my friends would play AAU, if it was somewhere close, and I would go see them. College coaches were there. They had big time camps, the ABCD camp, the Nike camp, Boo Williams camp. They had all type of camps going on where college coaches used to go, but. I would stay home and lift weights a little bit, play football, 7-on-7 football, and do track and field.
But the other thing that's curious to me is the fact that you were a all around athlete, which a lot of coaches look for, someone that could excel in many different sports. And on top of it, you had a benefit that a lot of kids don't have when they're coming out of high school, is you were a 4.0 grade point average in school, which is going to college, a lot of college coaches' issues are not with what players do on the floor, but what they do off the floor. And with a 4.0, I got to think that, man, there had to be more schools checking you out. It just drives me crazy when I look into it.
Man, listen, it's funny. My family and friends, we talk about it all the time. It's like we just scratch our head because we don't know what criteria colleges were looking at. Obviously, my high school team was loaded. I can't lie about that. We had a bunch of top 100 recruits on our team. I mean, we had some of the, we had a McDonald's All-American on my team. We had, three, four guys, 6'8" and above on the team. So we highly recruited guys on the team. It wasn't like I was the only player on the team. You know, I wasn't even thought of as being the best player on the team by my teammates and stuff like that. You know, even though I knew I was one of the best players, but I wasn't looked at as like the guy who was going to make it, you know, on the team. So maybe that's what the college coach was looking at. I don't know. But I was committed to go to Walsh University. That's where I was going to go, NAIA.
Oh, really?
That's where I had committed to go. I was going to play football and basketball at Walsh before Cleveland State, you know, came and gave me a chance.
How long did Cleveland State, being the only D1 school that really pursued you, how long did it take them to pursue you? And when did you start feeling like that was a spot?
My senior year. They recruited me my senior year.
So it took that long. You weren't even like being looked at them by like sophomore year, junior year, where some players are getting.
Yeah, no, nothing happened before my senior year. Nothing happened before my senior year.
That's crazy.
I took two visits. I went to Walsh University and I went to Cleveland State. I went to Walsh University first. I committed there. I signed my NAIA letter of intent. And then later on, we had won the state championship. And after that state championship, I took my visit to Cleveland State, and then I committed to Cleveland State in NCAA Division I.
I've been to Cleveland State. We played there when I was at Niagara University. And I mean, it's not considered – it's got a bad reputation in America as a city. I kind of liked it myself, but it's just I had a good time when I went there. But did you – because of the lack of attention, let's say, did you go with an attitude?
Actually – you know what? When I committed to Cleveland State, I was just excited to get the opportunity to play Division I because I thought about turning it down, to be honest with you, because
really?
I didn't really – my thinking, like in my family, we didn't think that it made that big of a difference. We didn't know. No, we didn't really know. We was like, man, look, we going to school to get an education. We want a free education. If you have a chance to go pro, if you're that good, it don't matter what school you go to. That's what we believed in our heart of hearts. But, you know, we talked to Coach Waters, who's my coach, who I love to death. I'm so appreciative of him. He explained the difference between going to a Division I and going to, you know, NAIA and the benefits of what happens if I have a good academic and a good athletic career from going to NAIA versus going to NCAA. And so when he put it to us that way, it made sense to go to Division I. And so when I got there, you know, I was happy to be there. And I wanted to show that I belong, you know.
That's that attitude I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
It's like
I wanted to show that I belong. That's all.
Yeah. Before we get obviously in the athletic side of the university experience, let's stay true to your parents and their family values. What did you study at Cleveland State? You obviously got your degree, I'm assuming.
Yes, I got my degree in health science.
Give me your GPA.
Ooh, I don't know my GPA. It was either 3.0 or a little or right under a 3.0.
Your parents were all right. Your parents are all right with that?
They was all right with that because I'm a pro. So
yeah, exactly.
You know, if I wasn't gonna be the smartest guy on campus, I had to be the best. I had to be the best at something. But I took some hard classes, and you know, some of those classes were, you know, were extremely tough while trying to balance playing basketball. It's not like I didn't take a bunch of cake classes, you know, when you start talking about physics. You know, 1 and 2 chemistries, the biologies, right. The anatomy and physiology, neurals.
I'm not trying to downgrade your GPA, man. Mine was a 2.0001, so.
I was around the 3.0 area.
Yeah, I was that dumb college kid that screwed up early and had to, like, my senior year while all my boys were partying. I was trying to get my grades to graduate. You know, I did it the opposite way.
See, the one thing I did that helped me, I took summer school all 4 years.
I did the same thing, unfortunately.
I never took a session off so that I can balance out not taking too many hard classes during the season.
Yeah, but you took summer school for that reason. I took summer school because I had to make up for the grades I didn't get during the year. There's a whole difference. You know, there's a big difference between the two of those.
Hey, look, you got it done, though. As long as you got it done.
So, but you go from barely being recruited by D1 schools, you still got records at Cleveland State that exist. Today, your number's retired.
Yes, sir.
It was 4 years after you graduated. I think they already retired your number. Those 4 years, man, and I always talk about this with American guys that have been through the 4 years like I did, is when I talk to kids that want to go to the States and want to go play in college, I'm just like, we always say it's the best 4 years of our life afterwards. But while you're living it, it ain't the best 4 years of your life, man. It's hell.
I mean, it's tough.
It's tough, man. I mean, it's not easy.
No, it's not. But for me, it got easier as it went on. Because once you learn like the system, once you learn the expectations, and once you like get a handle on everything, for me, it became fun because I saw myself getting better. So even though I was working hard and it was tough, like you said, it was very tough. You know, I would go to bed at night exhausted every day, but But I saw my results. You know, I saw myself getting bigger, faster, stronger. It was like magic. I saw my skill set developing to where I became like elite, like very elite. I could see it. And I was like, so I wanted more of that feeling. So I was willing to make those sacrifices and go through that pain.
Isn't that process such a great feeling when you're like, damn, not only can I do this, but I could do it better than just about everybody around me. That's a great feeling.
It's really magical when you can do something that you've never been able to do before,
right,
and then it becomes easy for you to do. It's like you look at yourself like, man, this hard work thing, man, it really works. And when I would go home, this is how I knew that I was really good and that I was getting better. When I would go back home and play in Dayton, because, you know, we believe we're the best ballers in Ohio. Dayton, we do. So when I would
I know y'all do.
So when I go home and play, my teammates who I played high school with and other guys that came home from college, they was looking at me different every summer. Like, man, Cole, what you up there doing? What they got you up there doing? I'm like, man, nothing, just lifting, just, you know, in the gym, boom, boom, boom. They was like, man.
You ain't giving no secret. Ain't giving no secrets away.
They would tell me. They would be like, bro, you want some different stuff out here while I'm playing. And so that's how I knew. I'm like, okay, I must be nice. I must be getting better. Let me go up here back to Cleveland and do some more.
Yeah, that even feels better when your peers are seeing it, you know, when your boys are seeing it.
They're not going to lie to you. If you trash, they're going to tell you that you're trash.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
And they're going to make and they're gonna try to make you feel like trash, too.
Sir, yes, sir.
What was it like from the last game at Cleveland State until the draft? What did you go through as a player? Were you doing camps? Were you doing... I mean, you end up going in the first round. Did you stay away from camps because you had like a high stock at that time? What was that period like between the last game at Cleveland State and the draft day?
So after my last game at Cleveland State, when it finally became a reality that
sucks. That sucks, doesn't it? That's a hard time of our life.
And that was tough. That last game, I wanted to cry. I might have cried back in my room by myself.
We all cried a little bit, man.
But that's when it became a reality. Okay, I'm a pro. Like, playing pro was the next step. And, you know,
But my man, look at you had that advantage, that because that's why you didn't cry so much. Let me throw you some old man knowledge right now.
Okay.
When I came out of Niagara University, I had no idea I was ever going to play basketball again. Now, those are tears.
Yeah, so, you're right.
Because that was like, damn, what am I going to do with the rest of my life if I can't do this?
You know what? You're right, because I didn't let myself go too bad because I knew that I was going to play again. And so I started the process, you know, me and my parents, we started the process of, you know, vetting the agent, you know, trying to find out where I was going to train at. I found out my range for that point in time, because obviously that changes, you know, when you get in the draft workouts. But I ended up leaving school about 3 weeks earlier. You know, some of my professors allowed me to take my finals early, so that I can leave and go focus on training, which that was a blessing for me. I was able to leave school early and work on my craft. I went down to Smyrna, Georgia. Me and my trainer, Cedric Tony. And it's funny, my training partner was Dave.
Damn, the Sixers, baby.
You know Cedric
Tony, yeah, baby. That was my team back in the day.
That was my trainer. And me and my teammate here, David Lighty, we were the only two guys. Me and him was training every day. So me and Dave would play one-on-one, would run, you know, 17 suicides, lift weights together.
Man, you just threw out that word 17, and that just made me feel like,
ooh, man.
I'm not sure many of my listeners know what a 17 is, but that's running from side court to side court 17 times in under a minute.
Yes, sir.
And that ain't easy, man. That's almost worse than suicide sprints.
Hey, man, it's tough, but that's what it was for what, to the draft was in, I think, July. So from the end of my last game, when we lost in the NIT, from the end of my last game up until that point, it was all training and eating and lifting. Basketball, eat, lift, slip, sleep every day.
No NBA camps, no like Portsmouth, Hawaii, Orlando.
I didn't need to go to any camps because I had put in such a remarkable senior year.
Right.
All of those camps wouldn't have did anything but overexpose me.
Exactly. It would just dropped your stock down.
Right. So I did 11 workouts, 11 NBA workouts. I knew my range was the lottery, end of the lottery to the early second round. I knew I was going to go somewhere in between there. And once draft night started, you know, I knew that Miami had the first pick of the second round. I knew that I wouldn't go below there because my agent, you know, obviously they talk whatever. And so when they moved up to get me, it was like let's get this thing started.
First round, Chicago Bulls. The minute the Bulls take you, you all of a sudden now you know what the NBA cycle is like because, first of all, you must be thinking Bulls. Where were you?
I was actually in Dayton.
Oh, you were in Dayton. You're at home.
At my house, at my parents' house. I had my whole family there. My college coaches, some of my teammates, some of my high school teammates. You know, I didn't want to go to New York or anything like that. I wanted to be around the people who I knew, the people who had been there for me from day one. That's who I wanted to be around.
Right.
Yep.
So the legend of Jordan, Chicago Bulls, the history, the titles, all that was like quickly lived because before you knew it, you were in a three-way trade.
Yeah.
You traveled from Chicago to Minnesota all the way down to Miami.
Well, I knew I was paying attention in the draft. So I knew that once I went to Chicago, I had been paying attention. So I knew that it was going to be a series of trades. So I didn't go anywhere. I went straight to Miami. All of those trades and stuff was worked out that night. So I knew I was going straight to Miami. But it is cool to say I was drafted by Chicago in the first round because Michael Jordan was my favorite player. So
of course,
to be able to hear that is pretty cool.
Yeah, then you could say, well, they don't want to bring me in because they already have one Michael Jordan. They don't want to have another one.
I ain't going to say that because it's only one Mike, man.
There's only one. You got that right.
One Mike.
I'm thinking that draft merry-go-round, though, is the best thing that ever happened to you because you go from 4 years ago not getting any D1 looks to all of a sudden being a two-time NBA champion, man. I mean, that's just – first of all, any of those two rings there in France with you?
No.
Oh, man, come on. You were going to – I was about to make the crossover of the show if you could just held that – just held it up and
– Don't stay at home in the safe.
Come on, man. I thought you could show us one of them.
Nah, maybe, you know what? You know, maybe at a future date, you know, maybe I might bring them out here. But for now, you know, I leave them at home. You know, I don't want to risk.
I had a guy to play with the Washington Redskins that won the Super Bowl, Mark Ripien. You probably heard of him. He used to go up and do his speech every day. And when he walked up to the podium to do his speech, he would do this. And he would, like, wrap his Super Bowl ring. And he's like, damn, that thing always gets in my way.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I wear it, I do make sure people see it. But you don't have to. They're going to see it anyway.
They're going to see it anyways, yeah.
But I do enjoy when I wear it. But it was a whirlwind to go from, you know, little known recruit to playing on the most watched team in all the sports. It was definitely a 360.
Dude, that team kind of revolutionized NBA because it was really the first team that had that three-headed monster, super team, whatever you want to call it, with LeBron, with D-Wade, and Chris Bosh that got together. But you had already met LeBron from what I've read, right? You met LeBron the summer beforehand in some sort of pickup game or something?
No, it was a lockout when I had got drafted. So,
oh, okay.
At lockout, you know, I had went up to, you know, went to his house and we played some pickup ball and did some drills, got some shots up, and I had met him before the season even started. But we wasn't the first super team, though. The Celtics had their big three.
Well, yeah, that kind of, I mean, kind of, but It wasn't the same thing. It was like the whole big three at Miami was like, it was all set up at the, you know, at the Olympics and.
So that's just the LeBron effect. That's all. But it was other big threes. It hasn't been many championships where it wasn't a good big three, really.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're right. You're right. But it you know, it's just changed. Come on, man. I'm trying to do my job, man. Give me some love. You're trying to take my job from me too. Look at you. So when you met LeBron, you were already on the Heat.
Yes, I
was. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So he had no GM power to bring you in. He's like, hey, he's on the team. He's all set to go.
Yeah, and he's from Northeast Ohio. He happened to be there during the lockdown.
Right.
You know, I'm from Cleveland, which is not far, and so you know, we was able to link up, and you know, I was able to meet him and train. It's funny because before I wasn't signed to Nike at first. And then I wore some Adidas to his house to hoop in. <Uh-oh>. And so after some conversations, you know, I ended up having a Nike deal.
Hey man, it's good to have friends up top.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I want to talk about the two guys. I'm gonna try to take advantage of a situation of someone who played with two of what I think are the best players around. D Wade is a guy that I watched in college at Marquette, and he was a guy that he progressed over the years. He got better and better and better. And whether you loved him or you hated him, because he was just one of those guys with that, like, just that work ethic. You know, he's throwing himself on the floor all the time, and probably the reason why his career is a little bit shorter than most people's because he was so physical. But what was it about him that you saw that made him into a better player? Because he wasn't one of those guys, like I'll talk about LeBron in a second, that you go like, damn, you know he's gonna be the man. D Wade was a little bit of a question mark, even though he was first round.
D Wade was determined. He's one of the most determined basketball players, athletes I've ever seen. His ability to mentally focus and get done what he wants his body to get done, you know, it's remarkable, you know, because obviously we've seen him healthy, what he can do. He's special. He's flash.
It's unbelievable.
But some of the times his body wasn't 100%, and he would still go out there and put 30 on the board for us and help us, you know, advance. You know, especially I remember those Indiana series. Man, his knees were bothering him so bad. But, you know, we couldn't win those series without him. And, man, he would go out there and he would do treatment all day. And he would go out there mentally focused, and he would make sure his body could do what he needed to do in order for our team to win. So he's one of the most determined guys I've ever seen play. And for his size, he has gifts for his size that's, like, unmatched. Like, his hands are, like, you would think he was 6'8", the way his hands are. And he wears the same size shoe as, like, LeBron, but he's, like, 4 inches shorter. So it's, like, he has special gifts and attributes that, you know, you can't coach, you know.
Yeah, it was crazy watching him play, knowing that he was one of those players that you watched just get warmed up during the game, because you all see him warming up and you're like, damn, man, he looks like he ain't going to make it to the first 3 minutes of this game.
And once he get warmed up, it's over for the competition.
It's over. Now LeBron is totally different, because he came in with all the expectations. You know, some would think it's insurmountable that he lived up to expectations that he had before he left Cleveland, mm-hmm. or before he went to the Cavs. What was he like, other than his talent behind the scenes? Because a lot of people just say that guys like him, like Mike, Kobe, they're just especially talented, and you know, it's just, it is what it is, and they're always going to be that good. But that's bullshit. That ain't happening. You got to work hard. Was LeBron that kind of guy too?
LeBron is definitely God-gifted with some things that nobody else has. But what he does, right, he works hard with those gifts, which is why he's all world, you know. He knows that he's blessed with certain gifts, but he don't take those gifts for granted. He's the most disciplined individual that I've ever seen, you know, with my own two eyes. You know, he wakes up at a certain time every day. He does his treatments around the clock every day. He gets his work in on the court every day. He gets his rest. He balances his, you know, his mind, his meditation. He does his routine that he does is a lifestyle for him. It's not just for basketball. It's a lifestyle for him. So, you know, he's one of the reasons why I learned never take time off in the offseason. You know, you work out all year round, but you just you don't work out crazy 100% all year round, but you work out all year round so that you're never totally out of shape. LeBron's never out of shape. And that's a
Tom Brady attitude too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why he's different and so special, because he's never out of shape ever. And that's what I learned from him. He's always professional. He's a detail-oriented guy. So when you already God gifted and you work harder than everyone else, there's no way anybody could be, you know, better than him. And that's why he's this generation's best player.
I'm not sure. You led me right into my next question. I'm not sure that LeBron's gonna listen to this. I don't know how, if you guys are boys or not, if he's gonna download it or not. But if he does, I'll say what's up to him. My next question is, who's the GOAT? I give you the choice between LeBron, Kobe, Michael,
MJ.
Pick whoever you want.
MJ's the GOAT.
But have you told LeBron that?
We haven't talked about it, but at the time when we played, it was already established. But that was years ago when we played together. But now he's accomplished a lot more, so that the conversation is a lot more interesting. But for me, MJ is the GOAT, and I think LeBron is next, you know, after MJ. I think LeBron is the next best player to ever play.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. I feel the same way. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that MJ just stuck with Chicago and you know, suffered through 6-7 years and did it. And
I don't even try to go into why. I played with LeBron against him and seen him play. I also seen MJ play. And, you know, obviously, if you see him with your eyes and then you look at the accolades and the combination of everything, for me, it's just, you know, at their best, I believe MJ is just a little better. But I don't think that, you know, like a lot of MJ lovers try to bash LeBron and say bad things.
Nah.
I don't think that, because there's things that LeBron can do that MJ didn't do. The same way there's things MJ did that LeBron didn't do. So, you know.
If you're a basketball fan and you know the game, you know that's just the way it
is. LeBron is a master at basketball, I'll tell you that. He's a master at the game of basketball. He's a genius.
The knowledge, his basketball IQ is above most people. I mean, it's his vision. His vision on the court, his vision—I mean, just—it's crazy. It really is. But
when you see it up close and personal, it'll scare you. It's crazy. The guy's a real genius at basketball, man.
4 years later, man. As I'm gonna say it again, 4 years later, you could barely get a D1 scholarship, man. You get drafted in the first round, all of a sudden you're back-to-back NBA champions. Just what can possibly be going through your mind after the first one, after the second one, going, what am I living? I mean, you got to be thinking that.
It's funny because it was the norm for me, because I didn't know anything else. It's not like I had played years and lost and, you know, had experience. It was all that I knew. And so I was...
It happened so quick.
Man, it was very quick. So I was just like, man, this is what the NBA is about, winning championships. You walk in, you train hard, you know, you play on a good team and you win championships. And Chris Bosh had told me, he was joking, but he was a little serious too. He said, Norris, if you stay in this league long enough or you ever play for a different team and you don't win, he said, you might need a sports psychologist. Because, you know, it was the norm of how we did things that Miami, the way Miami runs their organization is not the same way everywhere else. You know, Miami is a very top-notch organization.
That's the Pat Riley effect.
Yeah, so, you know, and he was right, man. The first time I had, like, a losing season, man, it was like, I was like, what is this? I was like, what is going on? And I thought about what Chris Bosh said. I was like, you know what? Chris was right. I think I'm...
You're walking me into my next question, because my next thing is like, no one can take away what you did in Miami. I mean, those rings are forever. Those memories will stick around forever. And you got all that glory at such a young age, and you didn't go through the NBA cycle, you know, the spin cycle, I call it sometimes. Then all of a sudden you're traded from the Heat to New Orleans. You played well with the Pelicans, but it was short-lived. You headed off to China for a quick stint. You came back to OKC. After 4 years of incredible success in Miami, the 4 years plus you had the stability at Cleveland State, how does a kid like you who, what, at this point you're 26?
At that point in time?
You're around 26, right? How do you deal with that, you're still playing in the NBA, let's not get confused.
Right.
You know, but you went from the top to the bottom so quick.
Yeah, one thing I learned, and like you just said, I was still in the NBA, still part of the elite.
Right.
So never get that misconstrued. And my dad would never let me. He would always say, son, no matter what's going on, remember real life. He said,
but Norris, come on, man, be honest with me.
I'm about to tell you. I'll tell you right now because.
Okay, yeah, throw it at me, please.
I was like, man, you know, like wondering what happened. You know, is it me? Is it because I'm not good enough or whatever? But I was always good enough. But it's the business of basketball, and you have to learn not to take the business personal. And I always put in the work. You know, I was still working out the same way. And my father told me, he said, never get it twisted. He said, remember real life. He said, the NBA is not, you know, real life. He's like, remember, he said, you're getting paid to do a job. Whether you play a million minutes or whether you don't play at all, your contract for that year is what that contract is. So if I'm making $1 million at the beginning of the year, whether I play all the minutes or no minutes, it's not going to make me a dollar more or a dollar less. You know, and so focus in on each season, put in my time, and remember that it's a job. And I'm still doing what I love to do. He said, if you ever get tired of that, you can always go work at an office. And when he said that, when he said that to me, I said, you know what, Pop, you're right. It ain't that bad.
That's what I told you. When my dad said I could always go to Burger King and flip burgers, I was like, oh, shit, I got to do something.
Man, that's when my mom and dad, they always keep me on track of real life. Because, you know, they worked 30 years apiece, you know, in the office. My dad worked at the hospital. You know, they did what I call real society work. You know, playing basketball, you know, we inspire people or whatever. But there's people out here that's actually doing real work. And so he always would, like, man, you can always go sit behind a desk. You can always, you know, come home and, you know, cut grass and do all that. And I was like, you know what, Pops, you're right. It ain't that bad. And that's why I snap out of it. Anytime I feel a certain way, I just be like, Norris, you're still playing ball. You're still getting paid. You can always go home. And I'll be like, nah, I'm not ready to go home.
I'm going to ask you a little bit of a tough question here because, you know, you and I, you did it obviously earlier than I did, but I did a lot longer time ago, but I grew up with ball players that were better than me, ball players that have way more talent than I did, ball players that unfortunately their family situation wasn't as strong as what I had at home with my mom and dad and what you obviously from this story have at home with your mom and dad. How easy is it for you? Because every time that we've talked about an issue that you've come up with, you've immediately went back to your mom and dad.
Yeah, man, it's tough to see. I have friends like that, you know, some of them didn't make it because of, you know, instability at home. But, man, it's always a blessing when you can have a family, man. You never take your family for granted. And, you know, I was just, you know, I was blessed and fortunate to have a family, and I was going to utilize that. Not that I'm using them, but like you're fortunate enough to have something.
You might as well use it.
The thing that it brings. And so, you know, and I try to encourage my other friends and, you know, friends and family who may not, you know, have the same home dynamic as me, because you still don't want to make excuses. You know, there are people who had, you know, a lot less and they still made it.
Of course. But against more difficult odds.
Yeah, there was a lot of guys that were more talented than me that didn't have the discipline, the work ethic that I had. And so I was able to catch up to them. And part of that was because I had parents and coaches that taught me how to work.
Let me bring us over to Europe now, man. What'd you know about European ball before it even became a possibility? Like, this is my favorite part with all the Americans. What'd you know about being over here?
I didn't know much. I knew that they did have high level basketball because I, you know, watched the Olympics, and they would talk about certain guys that were really good. And I'm like, well, they're not in the NBA, but they were like, nah, they're really good. They play in the EuroLeague. And I'm like, oh, so there obviously are some good players out there. And then some guys would talk about like Manu Ginobili. You know, he came from Europe. I remember Pau Gasol when they won the championship. And they did a special on him, talk about his roots from Barcelona. Dirk Nowitzki coming from Germany. And so, you know, they would always talk about, you know, some of the guys from Europe, but I didn't know much about the European lifestyle. I didn't know it was so beautiful. I didn't know the dynamics, the countries that made up the EuroLeague. I didn't know any of that. I just knew that guys went over there either they wasn't good enough for the NBA, or they rather go there and stay there because they could make more of an impact than they would in the NBA.
I was talking to Kevin Pangos in an interview the other day that just came out, and he was the same thing as most of us Americans were like, we got over it, we joined the league, we joined our first team as you and Maccabi, we'll talk about it in a second here. And it's like all of a sudden you're playing the league game, you're playing the domestic game, you're playing the Euro, and you're like, wait, and you don't even know what game you're playing in at this point.
Listen, that was the most different thing ever when they were separating domestic league and Euro League. I'm like, you go look, you try to keep up with the team standings and go at the team stats and everything like that. They in two different categories. You got the Euro League standings, and then you got the, you know, you got your inner country, like your domestic league. And I was like,
right. And then in the middle of the season, you got to play like the King's Cup or the whatever cup. It's like, they just throw a tournament at you.
And listen, it was the most different thing ever. I'll just say that. But I soon learned the difference from domestic league and Euro League. I learned that, one, from how the crowds were. Two, from the, you know, the basketball. We play one basketball one game, play with the Euro League ball the next game. And then I'm like, okay, right. Okay, now. And then the level of play in most cases, the Euro League level of play is higher.
Man, again, your first encounter over here is probably one of my favorite cities that I've ever been in. And you come over to Tel Aviv, man. Again, just lucky, call it whatever you want to call it. I care what less, but you get brought over by Tel Aviv, man. How beautiful is that city?
I didn't realize how great it was until, honestly, until like almost the end of the season, because I was coming from Miami. I lived in Miami. So I was like, you know, there's not much that's better than Miami. So when I got there, I was like, you know, it's nice, you know, it's nice. But then I soon realized once I went to other places in Europe, and when I played for other places in Europe, I was like, oh, Tel Aviv is probably like one of the top cities. For American, Tel Aviv is the best city that you can go to.
Right, exactly. You know? But if you talk to most Americans, they're like, man, you live in Tel Aviv, what are you, crazy?
Yeah, that's when I was talking to my other friends that played, it was like, bro, Tel Aviv is like the best place you can be at in Europe. And I'm like, really? Cause I didn't know. I'm green. I didn't know anything. It was like, no, bro, you're in the best situation. Everybody speaks English. The city is hot mostly year round. I'm like, okay, so it's not that bad here.
What the biggest difference, or what are the differences for you as a player, from NBA to coming up? Once you got your kind of, let's say, your feet wet, mm-hmm. and you knew what you were doing. What were the biggest difference between playing in the league and playing in your league?
Well, the rules are different. For one, the mm-hmm. defensive 3 seconds that you have in the NBA is not here in Europe. So bigs
zone up, baby. Zone
yeah,
up.
They don't have to be as mobile. They can stand in there and wait for you. And then the tactical fouling is a lot different. I remember the first time somebody tactical fouled me in Europe. I mean, I wanted to tackle that guy. But I wanted to get it. They was like, no.
Tactical, but you talk about that half court fast break when he just grabbed you. It's like,
and I'm like, man, what you doing? But they was like, no. Like, that's the tactic. So I learned that the tactics of the game are different here. Different, you know, the coaches control more of the tempo of the game here than in the States, from the game strategy and the tactics. So that was the biggest difference. And then obviously the athleticism was a little different, you know.
Right.
But the shooting in Europe, they shoot better. You know, in the NBA, they say 40% is a good shooter. Out here, you got guys that shoot 57% the whole season, you know, crazy, 55% from three the whole season. So the shooting out here is elite.
I mean, one of the first things that people talk about is a schedule. And you got 82-game regular season in the NBA. And they play it in a shorter time also, which kind of crams the games a little bit. But here in Euroleague, every night matters. I mean, you know, NBA, a player could take a night off, a team could take a night off, a couple players could take a night off here and there. You can lose a couple games in a row, but you look at the game on a night-to-night basis, and a lot of people yell at me because I always talk about the product here is a better product on a night-to-night basis. The NBA is the NBA. It's always going to be number one. But to watch a game and the intensity of a game on a nightly basis in EuroLeague, there's nothing like it because every game does matter.
Yeah, but once again, that's only because of the structure.
Right.
Point difference matters, you know, so you're going to play to the last second because the point differential does matter. It determines the tie or not. The way it's set up is the reason why it's like that. You know, I'm sure if they had point differential in, you know, the NBA, it would be a lot different, you know, but it's too many games to do that. The point of the game is to win the game. But in Europe, that makes the games a lot more intense, you know, game by game, night, you know, night in and night out because of the structure of, you know, like I said, point differential and how they break ties and plus minus. All of those things make it more intense on a night in and night out basis.
Yeah, man, when I commentate games and there's a team up by like 16 points with like, you know, like a minute and a half left, and they're still pushing to go down, hit a three. I have to explain to the people that are listening to the game, like, hey, man, this is the way we do things. Or when a coach, you know, in the States, if you're up by like six with about 8 seconds left, you call a timeout, that's a cardinal sin. So I always feel the need to explain that to the people that are watching the game, man. But you know, the league is so interesting because, I mean, you guys have made a push recently. You won 7 games in a row. And then, and of course, that, you know, that catches up to you sometimes. You've lost a few in a row, but you get so close to that playoff spot, or you get so close to that home court advantage in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lose 2 in a row, you might be out of it.
Absolutely. Like you said, the margin for error is so slim, you know, in the EuroLeague. And it's not 32 teams. It's only, 16, 17 teams? So, you know, you don't have a lot of room for error. And so it definitely makes for more intense competition on the night in, night out basis. Mm-hmm. And I'm appreciative that I can play in both leagues. I was able to adjust my game, translates to both leagues. And not every American games guard, especially a guard, not everyone can adjust. So I'm just thankful that I learned how to play the game in a way to where I can play anywhere in the world.
Man, the old school American slashers that used to come over here that couldn't shoot from the outside,
struggle.
They suffered, man, with that defense, that zone defense.
Because they can play zone in Europe. If they can play zone, there's no more slashing dunking when you can play zone.
You got those guys getting offensive foul after offensive foul, man.
Yes, sir. You got to have that jumper out here in Europe.
You got to. You have to. If not, you're done, man. Your game's over.
Yes, sir.
You've also been in Italy. You've been in Montenegro. You've been around a little bit. Monaco last year was,
sir.
I mean, number one, I had to be on. I mean.
Monaco.
I'm thinking the team of Monaco could charge people to go play there for a year, right?
And Monaco was nice living on the coast.
Yeah, man. But you guys, I mean, that team wanted to win the championship bad in France. They wanted it, and they went all out. They came in second place the year before. They signed you. You guys were up on top of the Euro Cup. You're 21-3 in the league.
Yep.
You know, back in March when all this Corona stuff hit, I said in an interview, I'm like, you know, there's a lot of players and a lot of teams. I should say a lot of players, especially American players, that I would have felt that the team wasn't doing so well. We're like, man, I'm glad this season's over. I can go home and chill. You know what I mean? I go back home, and no one knew how difficult it was going to be. You know what I mean? So,
right.
But in your position, I mean, you guys were going to win that championship. You guys were going to win one, if not both.
Yeah, we were going to win the French league, and we were going to win. I believe that we had a good chance of winning the Euro Cup championship. So it was disappointing.
How difficult was that, man?
It was disappointing a little bit, but for me, I'm like safety first. And any chance I get to go back home to my house, I'm all for it. Because the season in Europe is so long. You know, it's
long,
9-10 months you're talking about. So, and we didn't know how serious it was going to be. You know, because I was prepared to go home, but I also knew that it was a possibility that I was going to have to come back. But so I was kind of, I'm going to be honest, I was excited to go home. I hadn't seen my mother and my grandmothers in so long. My father, he was out there with me. But I hadn't seen my mother in so long. So I was like, man, cool, I get a little break, go home. But for us to not be able to come back and finish it off, no, that's the disappointing part. Because as a competitor, I wanted to get those championships. That's all I'm about. You know, at this point in my career, I want to play somewhere where I can compete for championships.
The thing, every time I do these interviews and I find certain things in research and I look for strange things, odd things, whatever. What one of the things that I want to ask you, it might be a difficult question, I'm not sure, but you went the 4 years at Cleveland State, you went the 4 years at Miami. But since then, you've essentially been on six different teams over the last 5 years. And I'm not knocking that because I think a lot of players here, Keith Langford, you know, guys like that have made careers in doing that. There's nothing wrong with that. But I've always felt like, and now that I get to know you a little bit better in this interview, you seem like the kind of guy that's going to excel with time and with a plan. You know what I mean? Going from one team to another, you'll be a good player forever because you got the talent. But it seems to me that your best attribute would be being on a team for 3-4 years. Am I wrong to assume that?
Obviously, when you play long stretches with teams, you get more familiar. But for me, I don't even think that deep into it. I just take it year to year, season by season, opportunity by opportunity. This is my job. This is what I do. My agent does his job, and I come to work, and I try to be the best teammate I can be. You know, wherever I play, you know, obviously championship is my expectation. That's all I know. And so I just try to bring that anywhere I go. And, you know, if I'm fortunate enough to play somewhere long term, I do believe that that'll be great. I do believe that, you know, you'll be able to see, you know, more special things. But if not, you know, it's okay. This is part of the career which you signed up for when you play professional sports. There's no guarantees that you're going to be with one organization for multiple years. The only guarantee is you get up and work hard. That's your only guarantee. You're not even guaranteed a job. You're only guaranteed to work hard and hope that a team, you know, wants to sign you.
Exactly. You guys at ASVA have a great thing going on, man. They've competed well over the last couple of years. Now they're in a position to have a permanent license for the EuroLeague. I'm pretty sure they're probably going to get it. It's an up-and-coming team. Does it feel that? Do you get that feeling around the stadium, the locker room, within the club? I mean, you got the backing of Tony Parker, which is obviously something that's huge for the team. But, you know, do you just get that vibe? You know, that like, yeah, man, we're here. We're getting there.
Yeah, you can definitely feel that something special is coming down the pipeline. I wasn't here last year, you know, but I know Tony. And Tony is a guy that's going to do things in a first-class way. The Spurs organization is known for being a first-class organization. And so he's bringing that same mentality here, you know, to his country here for ASVAL. And our team, you know, that's how we do things. You know, they take good care of us here. Facilities are nice. You know, we travel as best as we can. And obviously getting a EuroLeague license, you know, things will get even better as far as the budget, as far as with resources. It's unfortunate we can't have the fans here, but, you know, I know that the fan support here would be great, you know, once things get back to normal. So it's definitely a special time here in Lyon. And I'm hopeful that, you know, we can, you know, win the French championship this year and bring more excitement and be remembered here as one of the, you know, as one of the best ASVAL teams.
You're 32, man. I mean, I'm sure your parents have taught you to set goals and kind of look ahead a little bit, short-term goals, long-term. What are your goals, man? What do you want to do?
Well, right now, my goal, it's funny, this year is actually a milestone for me. So when I made it, when I got drafted to the NBA, I prayed that I could make it to play 10 years pro. So this is my 10th season pro. So anything after this year is a bonus for me as far as my original goal. But my body feels great. So, you know, and I don't have anything that's holding me back from playing. My family is in order. You know, they're healthy and everything is good. So there's nothing that's restricting me from playing. So, you know, my next goal is to play until, you know, I can't play anymore, you know. Obviously, I'll say, like, at age 35, I'll reevaluate, you know, things. But, you know, right now my body feels good. You know, my game is still sharp. You know, I feel like I can play and compete with the best of them. And so, you know, there's nothing holding me back. So right now I'm going to play until my body tells me that, you know, it's not time. And after that, you know, I have business things in place that I'm constantly working on, that, you know, that's can sustain me once I'm done playing.
We got these guys that helped me research, that you met them a little bit before we started this interview, and they do a great job. I always tell them, man, don't dig up any dirt. You know, I don't want any dirt, but, you know, I'm sure everybody's got a little bit of dirt going on. But they came up, and they'd kill me if I didn't ask you this question, about a bet that Dwayne Wade made with you one time that you couldn't make a half-court shot in a game, and he bet a Porsche?
It was practice. It was shoot-around. Well, yeah, so we was, I forget where we were, but it was an away game. We was just shooting around, and you know, he was just sitting on the side, and I dribbled the ball. And I just casually looked at the rim, and I was like, one shot? And then he was like, okay. He was like, what you want? What you want to put on it? And I was like, because I don't gamble. I don't believe in betting money. So right. I said, the new Porsche? And then he said, bet, one shot. I said, one shot. And I shot it, Swiss. And he looked at me and was like, the keys will be ready when we land. And when we landed, the keys was ready for me.
He had get out. He paid up.
Instantly. And he didn't give me no time limit on when I can have it. But I gave it back to him. Like, I held it for like 2 weeks. And when I brought it back, I washed it and I put gas in it. And so when I brought it back to him, he was like, he looked at me as like, hey, I can trust you. Like, he could trust me because I took care of his car, you know. He gave it to me. I brought it back, washed, gassed, and he was like that, after that day, he kind of was like you all right, Cole?
Hey, before we finish up with the personal stuff and the trivia question, which none of you all like, I want to give you the floor a little bit here and fill in our listeners on something that's called the Norris Cole Foundation. I want to let you just take that over and talk about what you do and what your plans are for kids in every walk of life, I guess.
Yeah, so the Norris Cole Foundation was created by me and my family. I wanted to be able to give back to communities that helped me, you know, that helped me make it. And so my most recent project was with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Miami. You know, I did the Norris Cole basketball camp. And we had, you know, all of the kids from Big Sisters, Big Brothers, Big Sisters Miami, which are kids that come from, you know, maybe broken families or live in at-risk communities, and gave them, you know, a chance to come to camp, you know, learn, you know, for some of the best trainers, you know, that I could get to come to my camp. You know, I have people from all walks of life. I had a silver medalist from the Olympics come and speak. I had Dr. Dribble, you know, come and speak. You know, I had some local trainers who train professional athletes also come and speak. And it's just a chance for the kids to see real people, you know, because a lot of times they see us on TV, but they don't know if it's real or not. And so, you know, they get to see me every day and know that I'm real and that I grew up and that I know what it's like to be a quote-unquote average person, you know. And I bring in all of these other people who have excelled, but who come from those same communities, and, you know, inspire them and talk to them about education and about taking care of their bodies, about being good students. And so, you know, I believe that's important because inspiration, other than education, inspiration is the biggest thing you can do for a kid. Because if you spark that fire, they'll do the rest. I was able to make it in basketball because I was inspired. Once I had the inspiration, I didn't need anybody else to, you know, push me. I was going to push myself. And that's what I try to do, you know, partner with Big Brothers, Big Sisters Miami.
You use inspiration the way I use passion, you know, and I think those two things go hand in hand. But you know, you from what I researched and what I read about your foundation, I think you almost downplayed a little bit because you talked about the camps, you talked about, you know, these other things, but the focus that I saw was more than the athletic side of it. It was academic. It was a healthy lifestyle. It's more than just a sport and just a sport and event. So I think your foundation actually serves for a lot more. You went the sports side interview.
The sports is how I get their ear. Sports,
right, exactly. How I get
their attention. They love sports. They love watching the NBA. They love, you know, professional athletes. And so I bring those athletes and those individuals that they look up to, so, to get their ear.
Yeah, that's your platform.
That's the platform. That's it. And so, right. But like you said, now it's definitely about a lifestyle because right. We don't talk a lot about sports in my camp. Obviously, we do drills and stuff like that, but in between the drills, the water breaks, you know, the lunch break, before we break down and leave, we always make them remember three things, three lessons, which helps with their attention span. We always talk about, like I said, life lessons on how to be good students when they go home, how to be good sons and good daughters, good citizens in the community. So I use sports to help get their attention for what's really important. So you're right about that, you know. I didn't want to downplay it, but you're right.
I didn't mean downplay. I just think that when it's your foundation, you don't want it. You don't try to like upsell it either. You know what I mean? So I wanted to make sure that it was defined the way that your foundation deserves to be
sports
defined.
Is the last thing, really. It's just sports is just the platform to get their attention right. To do the right things.
Man, let's get into these final two segments so I can get you out of here, man, because you're probably getting tired of my old ass here and on the microphone. This first part's a little bit about you personally, just the things you like, things you would love to do, things that have been special to you. And then after that, we'll do the trivia part, which all you guys just absolutely love to do.
One-on-One with Joe R. Lucas.
You got a free round trip ticket to go anywhere in the world. What's your destination?
Dayton, Ohio.
Really?
I'm going home. I haven't been home since August. That's the first place I'm going. I'm going straight to Dayton, Ohio. Go see.
Man, I've heard Maui. I've heard everything. My man wants to go to Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, I'm going straight to 937.
You must know mom and dad and your two sisters are going to be watching this podcast. You had to say that.
Hey, listen. I miss seeing my family, my people, you know, my hometown.
I hear you, man.
I haven't been in so long.
Hey, man, let me give you from an old man standard, man. When I was here back in 88 and 90, whatever, we didn't have FaceTime and all that. So don't be doing that. A phone call from me to my mom cost me about 200 euros, man.
Yeah, I understand that. But I also got my house there, too. That's true.
All right, next question. Last movie you watch or series or whatever.
The last series I watched was, I think, Queen of the South.
Queen of the South. Any good? Should I watch it?
It's really good, actually. I was behind, but I watched it all the way up to now. I'm caught up. I'm all caught up.
Netflix?
Yep.
All right, I'm going to write that one down. This is how I get all my information from y'all, man. You sit down at a table and you can eat, you can order anything from anywhere in the whole world. What's your go-to meal?
Diane Cole's chicken casserole with hot sauce.
Diane Cole.
My mama. Chicken casserole. The best thing ever in life.
Is she making homemade hot sauce?
No. It's not the homemade hot sauce. It's the homemade casserole. She make it from scratch.
Right. Right. She does a casserole from scratch. But what hot sauce are you using? Because I'm a hot sauce freak.
Oh, Red Hot.
Oh, using Red Hot. The Franks.
Yep.
You're using Franks.
Yep.
There you go. I got a jar sitting in my kitchen all the time. I hear you. Childhood idol.
I didn't really have an idol, but my dad was my hero. My dad was my hero growing
That's
up.
My man.
And I like Michael Jordan, obviously, for sports. Michael Jordan was my favorite athlete, but my pops was my hero, though.
Pre-game superstitions?
No, I don't have any superstitions, really. Not really. I don't have any superstitions.
Come on, where you put your pants on when you go out and like shoot around before the game?
I don't have any superstition. I have a routine that I do, but
routine. Okay.
I don't do my routine. I don't feel like I'm gonna have a bad game. I still feel like I can still have a good game.
All right.
Yep.
Tell me the one game if you can go back in time and play again that you'd want to replay and why.
I would go back and play that Youngstown State. When I was in college, that 41 points, 20 rebounds, 9 assists game.
You need one more assist, don't you?
I want to.
Hey, Cole, you don't mind if I call you Cole. I think we're boys now.
That's cool.
Hey, how many times did you go back and watch that video and look for that 10th assist?
Man, I went to the statistician and said, man, you're supposed to give me that 10th one. And I told some of my teammates, I said, man, all you had to do was make one more shot. Nah, but actually, after the game, you know, I didn't really care that much about it. But I was curious to know. I did ask them to recount it to make sure it was only 9. When they recounted, and I recounted too, it was only 9. But I definitely wanted that 10th one because it would have been the first triple-double in our school's history. And somebody else ended up getting it.
My question now is top 3 EuroLeague memories, but you can give me one of your top EuroLeague memories if you just want, because I know you haven't been around all that long. But
yeah, so I can give you one from almost each team. So this year, the game against Red Star, you know, having that big fourth quarter, we needed that win, you know, to help spark that 6-7 game win streak that we had. I remember I hit a game winner against Durasa Faka for Medusnos. I remember that. And then at Maccabi, my first EuroLeague game. My first EuroLeague game at Maccabi, I had a really good game. But just the first time seeing the gate, the Maccabi fans, the gate, man, it was
crazy.
Just that first time having that first experience of, you know, you hear about the fans in Europe, how, you know, fanatic, how crazy they are. But to get that experience from the gate, they always showed me so much love. But my first game for Maccabi, EuroLeague, man, they showed me so much love. Shout out to the fans of Maccabi. Y'all are Maccabi.
Man, if I ever had to be jealous about anything, say you got to play in Tel Aviv, man. I had the opportunity, but I never went, and I always regret it, man.
Some of the best fans in Europe, man.
They know me because every time I went over, I averaged like 35 a game, man. Whenever I was so excited to play in front of those people, man. It was awesome. Because they're such good fans, because they have such knowledge of the game too, they'll respect someone from the other team that goes out and plays a good game.
They do. And they respect guys to just play hard. Like, even if you don't have no points, but if you diving on the court and you playing hard defense or rebounding, they notice that. They recognize that.
Yeah, I love those people, man. They're great.
Yes, sir.
Last question here in this part. What are your plans when this is all over, man? Going back to Dayton. I know that, but from that point on.
Nah, my plans are to be a productive citizen. I want to do some teaching. Me and my father talked about me doing some teaching in my faith, as a Christian. But to be honest, you know, I really don't want to do too much strenuous work. I just want to do, you know, work that I want to do, you know. So teaching is something that I enjoy doing, working with kids, you know, something that I enjoy doing. And then I also enjoy the real estate, you know, business as well. So I'll be doing something that has to do with teaching, and I'll do something that has to do with real estate.
Have a plan, my man. Take it from an old man. Have a plan.
I work that plan every day. When I'm not practicing, I'm on my iPad. I'm talking to people. I have things that I'm doing now, but it's just not all the way complete. But I want to do it before the end. I want to have my stuff up and running before the end gets here.
I was one of those dummies that didn't listen to everybody told me to have something up and running, man. And I waited until I was done, and it was like 3 years of depression. You know what I mean? Through not being able to play the game and not knowing what direction I was going in, it was difficult. So if you need a bit of advice from an old retired basketball player, that's the best I can give you.
Now I tell anybody, save.
Got to, man. Got to.
You don't have to rush as much when you have a little nest egg.
You know, when I look back on it and I think to myself that I've actually been retired for twice as long as I've played, and I still feel young. You know what I mean? I'm 55, but I work out every day. I still feel young and in good shape. But when you think about it, man, I played for like 11 years. I've been retired for almost 22.
Lord willing, you're going to be retired longer than you played. So
exactly, and a lot longer, especially if it's basketball.
You got to prepare for that life after.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this game, they don't give you the watch and the cake to retire. They just stop calling us.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
get ready for that moment, my man. Yes, all right, let's do this thing. Let's finish it off with the trivia quiz, man. I think we're a little bit easy on you, but we'll see. We got 5 questions. Each one is ascending 10 points, 20 points, 30 points, 40 points, 50 points, all right?
The crossover test.
Question number 1 for 10 points. Who's the actual coach of Maccabi Playtika Tel Aviv right now?
Oh, man, I know who he is, but I don't know his name. He coached Olympiacos when I was playing for Maccabi.
You got that part right.
I can't think of it.
That ain't going to get you 10 points. Giannis Sferlopoulos.
Giannis. Say the last name again.
Sferopoulos.
Sferopoulos, yes, sir.
Number two, worth 20 points. Who's the current shot block leader of Asvel Virvan?
Whoo! Hey, I got to be between Moose or Yarshin. I'm going to say Moose.
You got it. That's worth 20 points. I don't want you to get shut out, man.
Yeah, Mustafa.
There you go. You got 20 points. Number three, in which season did Tony Parker play with Asvel during the lockout?
That was 2011-2012.
You got it. Yep. 30 points. That's up to 50 right now, my man. Look at you. You know that because that was the year you got drafted. That almost wasn't fair.
I know that because I met with Tony Parker today, and we talked about that.
just today?
Today, yeah.
Oh, man. All right. How many years has Asvel played in the EuroLeague since 2000, including this season?
Including this season. Two.
This is their seventh season, including this one.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that one either. I get the questions as you do, my man. I just loaded them up on this right before we started.
I had no idea.
Last question. So you got 50 points right now. This one's worth 50. You can take the all-time lead here with 100.
Okay.
How many games has FC Barcelona lost at home this season?
One.
They've lost four.
At home in EuroLeague?
In the early, they lost to Olympiacos, Maccabi, Ephes, and you guys beat them.
Oh. I knew that was our first time winning there. That's why I said one.
Right, that's why you said one, right?
That's why.
You thought that was a trick question, didn't you?
Yeah, I was like, I know that was our first time winning there in 20-some years, like they told me.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, my man, I'm going to let you out of here right now, man. It was literally a pleasure to meet you, man. As I was doing my research, I was thinking, I'm like, it drives me crazy to see how well-rounded you guys are nowadays, man, in this stage of your career, because I was nothing. I was just like, I was sport, basketball, and I had nothing going on around me. You know, it's family and basketball. But you guys got it going on, and it's obvious you come from a strong family background. It's obvious that your future is going to be as bright as anything, man. And just sitting down, having this opportunity to talk to you, man, I just wish you the best of luck and everything. And I don't really think you need luck, but I always like to send it out because we all need a little bit of luck along the way.
Man, thank you. I appreciate it, man. I had a good time with this interview, and I want to make sure I give a shout-out to Cleveland State in the tournament.
Who I picked them to win the first game. Who they got, Alabama?
They play Houston.
Oh, Houston. Ooh, that's going to be a
tough
one.
That's going to be tough, but, you know, we built Viking strong, baby.
Yeah, come on, Cleveland State, because I got him in the first round to go through the shock Houston.
But let's go, Vikes.
That's good. That's a good game. Shout out to mom and dad throughout. Give a shout out to the family. Give a shout out to the CSU Vikes, man. Norris Cole, thanks for being on the crossover, my man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.